Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. Hi, everybody. Jason Klom here. This is an unusual episode. It is a three-part Skype call, and we're doing two albums at the same time. So album number one, 1972 Class Clown by George Carlin. Album number two, 1979's Comedy Is Not Pretty by Steve Martin. And my two guests are Dave Willis and Casper Kelly. Thank you guys for being here.
Our pleasure, Mom.
I got to text my dad and tell him to stop calling me.
This is my Casper's pleasure.
That's okay. We can include this, right?
Yeah, we're going to, because I rarely edit because I'm lazy. So this will be fun. So
do you want me to call him in and bring him in?
Yeah, let's loop your dad in because I feel like he might have something to say about you. Is that and your influences?
No, I think he's here. I think he's calling to argue with me politically.
Oh, fun. That sounds like a ton of fun. So, well, first of all, the reason you gentlemen are here is because of your pretty faces going to hell.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm going to do a little teaser for later in the episode. I don't think Dave had heard Class Clown before.
Mm-hmm.
And the discussion about Catholicism immediately inspired an episode idea for season four, if we get one.
Holy shit. Well, that's fantastic. I'm excited to see whatever the hell that turns out to be. I also should point out that I do have a semi 3D mask now from the show that was sent to me in a burned box by the good people at Adult Swim. Had a label on it that said this box has been intentionally burned and has since stunk up my apartment. But thanks to your show, so thank you for that. For number one.
You're welcome.
I do appreciate that. One of the other ones they sent me came with mints, though. I know you guys aren't in charge of this, but mints next time. Just keep
those those are cyanide tablets. Don't touch them.
Oh, now if I had half of the mints already.
Well, they're good. Slow acting.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine.
Cyanide's very expensive. We sort of watered it down.
So then let's first talk about the album we've only done once. Let's go to Comedy Is Not Pretty.
Okay.
When did you first hear the album?
It was my first album. I requested it, and I was 9 years old. And so it was the first album I ever owned. And I just remember the beginning of it. My mom sort of walking through the room when he did that bit where he said, he's talking about the National Enquirer. He said, he said I had this thing on my balls. And my mom immediately went to the record player and picked up the cover and looked at it. And and I think she said, we should have a discussion when you're done listening to your record.
Holy crap. Well, I like that she gave you the opportunity to finish listening to it. That's kind of her.
Well, she just thought he was the guy on Carson with the balloon animal hat.
Of course, yeah.
And I was like, hey, this is the guy on Carson with the balloon animal hat.
This
but
is
Dave, I want to...
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No. I have nothing interesting to say.
Dave, I want to ask you a straight-up question. If your 9-year-old daughter... If you walked into the room and heard that line coming from her iPad, would you say we need to have a discussion after you finish this, or would you snatch it from your hands or her hands?
Well, I would snatch it from her hands, but then I would text the link to myself. And it really all depends. I wish my son doesn't even like music. Like, what planet did you come from? The thing that's interesting is I didn't realize I was 9. In my memory, I thought I was older, I guess. But I looked at the release and I was like, yeah. And Chris and I have this conversation all the time where you're talking about things that influence you or things that you liked when you were a kid. And you didn't even know why you liked them, but
sure,
you liked them. And like Mad Magazine, I was like, I learned about who Spiro Agnew was.
Mm-hmm.
Gate through my uncle's old Mad magazines. I didn't even understand the jokes. In fact, I learned about the history of it through the jokes. And, you know, or my parents would trot me out to do some Jimmy Carter impersonation. And I was doing Dan Aykroyd doing Jimmy Carter.
Of course, yeah.
But I still didn't know maybe what made it funny, but it was funny to me, you know? So.
You learn about The Exorcist or Poseidon Adventure through Mad Magazine, yes.
Right. So.
Out of curiosity, was one of the Mad Magazines the one that parodied the Sting on the cover?
Yes.
Okay. That's just a wonderful coincidence. You guys should go back and listen to the Arnie Kogan episode. Arnie Kogan, who is Jay Kogan, the comedy writer's father, wrote for Mad Magazine for years, and he did an episode of ours. And I have that Mad Magazine because I have a mild obsession with the vice presidency. And somebody got it for me because Spiro Agnew's on the cover. And I emailed him saying, hey, you know, I've only got this one Mad Magazine. I really wanted you to sign one, but I want one that's got something you've written in it. He's like, well, I wrote the cover story for that one. And I was like, oh, I'm a fucking idiot. I don't know how to read. So that is the one that's hanging on my wall. So just as you said that, my eyes immediately looked up to it. I that thing of learning about comedy or about life through humor. It's the same thing as like for me where I learned about pop music through Weird Al. It's not uncommon.
But why? You know, it's like you're drawn to it, and like my kids, they have other things that they're drawn to, but not particularly that. You know, it's like. So it is kind of cool and that I work in this field because I guess there was some sort of inner force that was pushing me in that direction because I was so, you know, I just liked all this goofy stuff and I don't know.
Do you know why this one drew you? Because typically people pick Wild and, well, not typically people pick Let's Get Small and then second would be Wild and Crazy Guy, and you're only the second person out of, you know, 210 or so recordings to pick Comedy Is Not Pretty.
I think it was an age. I don't think it was I'm not picking it over his other albums so much as my dad was a pilot and we would for Delta, and so we would fly on vacations, and I loved Delta had this radio channel called The Spice of Life.
Uh-huh.
And are you familiar with this at all?
I'm not, no.
All right, so I would get those giant big blue headsets with sort of the mini marshmallow earbuds, and I would listen to Spice of Life over and over and over and over again. That's all I would do on the flight and flip through a Mad magazine. And they would – so I learned about comics like – family-friendly comics like Jerry Clower.
Okay, yeah.
And they had a very mild narrator that would say, and now Steve Martin is going to explain why he needs a set of handcuffs for his cat. And then they'd play the bit, and so I got to the point where I couldn't do it now, but I could perform cat handcuffs, like, down to every beat. And so I just think... that album was coming out at the time, and I didn't, you know, I had to commandeer my parents' stereo, and that's just why. It's just has a very special memory for me because it was my first album.
Some kids learn state capitals, and then people like yourself and me, we learn comedy bits, and that becomes our shit.
Right. But I mean, he, you know, Steve Martin. I was never. Because it's funny, because you guys talk about Carlin, and it's like, Carlin didn't really hold, like, a great, I was not someone that bought a lot of stand-up albums, and Carlin didn't hold, like, this great place for me in the pantheon. Like, I always think of him as, from the 7 words you can't say on television, and just sort of being an older, I just think of him as being the older guy that, you know, that did a lot of topical humor, but it didn't resonate with me as a kid. I wasn't exposed to it either. I mean, he was my parents kind of kept me, they were kind of guarded. Steve Martin was, for the most part, pretty tame and goofy.
It's true. Maybe the language crept out here once in a while, but for the most part, like, he at least seems safe.
They tell you, Steve, why you're so fucking funny. I remember that one. I remember I used to have to go to the stereo and just sort of pot it down when that was coming up.
Oh, man.
Like I do now for my gangster rap when I'm driving in the car with my kids.
Sure, naturally. You just have one hand on the wheel, the other hand on the volume. That makes sense. Let's quickly then go over to Carlin, because it makes a good point. I'm not sure why I listened to Carlin as young as I did. How young were you when you first heard Class Clown?
I was 11.
Uh-huh.
I was living overseas on a compound in Saudi Arabia. My dad was an engineer, and they were building an airport in Jeddah. And so that would I was fifth grade. Is that right? Is that the right age?
Fifth or sixth, yeah.
Oh, maybe I was 10. I was 10.
Okay. Fifth
and
grade,
there was
sure.
These, and my parents were more, they're awesome, but they were not culturally savvy. They were not the hippie generation. They were just before it. So I had some friends, I'll do this fast, but I had these two friends. They were twins, Pete and John Vaught, and their parents were more hippies, and they had, you know, tons of great albums. So I would go over there and listen to, they would play George Carlin for me there and AC/DC and all manner of other things. And, as a side note, they were identical twins and they were big fans of Bruce Lee, and they made nunchucks out of, tape and duct tape and rope and so forth. And when they got mad, they would get in these really horrible fights and call each other ugly, or they would call each other zit butt, but they were identical twins. So you knew if one had zits on his butt and the other did too. But anyway, they played that album for me. And one last thing is they would often pick an album like those Monty Python ones we also talked about. And they would just say, only this track is funny. I'm only going to play this one.
Mm-hmm.
Class Clown. And I think Carlin on Campus, they would play the whole thing. And I didn't know anything about Catholicism. My first experience of what Catholicism was, or confession or limbo, came from this album.
That's perfect. Again, it's not dissimilar. So you learned about a huge chunk of the world in this skewed way, of course, skewed to a person who had learned in his own way that he decided he wanted to reject the church in one way or another. So you learned from that. You learn that little piece of life from it. Did you? Did this have like an immediate impact on you? Like, how early did you know you wanted to write comedy? Actually, that'd be a good question for both of you. But,
I was probably doing more superhero comics, but they just started to become funny, mm-hmm. and I just started making fun of the genre in the act of doing superhero comics. You know. Because you start to realize it's kind of silly. So I guess it was about that same time. So it was perfect timing for me.
How about you, Dave?
Well, I was a frustrated cartoonist, too. You know, I sort of had envisioned myself as, like, making a comic strip or being, like, a DJ or a really cool bartender at that age. But, you know, the idea of writing comedy did not occur to me until much, much, much later. Even in college, I think I sort of harbored an idea of, you know, maybe doing a comic strip or something, and I did a terrible one in college. But and man, am I glad that I didn't go down that road. But I don't know. I think sometime in college, I think it started to become kind of a, well, this is maybe something that could happen, but yeah. not really a real ambition, you know?
So comedy is not, go ahead.
I think for me, this is going to sound really dumb and naive, but cartooning, I understood it had to be written and worked on, but I think on some unthought of level, I thought these comedians just walked up and did this. Like, they just came up totally unprepared, and this is what came out in 45 minutes, and okay, that's an album.
Right. That everybody thinks that, though, I think, for the most part. That is, even the stand-ups that come on my show, that's usually their first thought. They have no idea that any work's being put into it, and then that's kind of the challenge later on, is like, oh, fuck, I have to work really hard at this. So Dave, for you, Comedy Is Not Pretty, it's your first comedy album, but would you consider it influential on your comedy, or did it just make you listen to more Steve Martin if you did, or did it have any effect on you as an eventual comedy writer?
Well, it was my first album of anything.
And just
music either. And I would say it was certainly influential, but also in a way, but you know how influence is. It's sort of like you're open to it in a way that, you know, I might have found George Carlin amusing if I would have been exposed to it, but I don't think it would have made me a different, you know, it might have made me a different writer. But I mean, the idea of being topical or taking down the church was not on my agenda.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I became exposed to Steve Martin, whereas just the silliness and the absurdity, I mean, that's certainly got a voice in what I do. I'd like to think it does. You know, someone had said something about it, like a comic says funny things and a comedian says things funny.
Sure.
And I was like, well, you know, I think Steve Martin is just this beautiful intersection of that for me.
Absolutely true. It's,
I mean, I don't know why the Cruel Shoes, I was playing the Cruel Shoes for my 12-year-old just recently. I was just like, just to see, well, does it, you know, what does he laugh at? And of course he was stone faced, but you know, I found myself just going, this is insane. Cause there's certain bits on Comedy Is Not Pretty that are fairly, they're garden variety, you know, but they're super funny because it's Steve Martin playing showbiz asshole doing them. And
right.
then there's something like Cruel Shoes, which is just, well, that's just insane. No one else on the planet would have come up with that, would have done that. And, you know, so I think I've just really responded to that.
Yeah, and it's not just, like you say, that mix of comic and comedian. It's also this mix of person and character that makes it so intriguing that he somehow manages to carry through at least three albums. I have not heard his fourth album, but he does manage to keep that up the whole time.
The Steve Martin brothers,
correct, right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's half banjo music, right?
I think so, yeah. And I don't even own that one, which is shocking, but I don't happen. I have not heard it, so I can't comment on it. But I at least know for three albums he kept up this insane persona character, possibly more him than he realized. And I don't know. It's a great
real it's a tightrope act too. I'm like, who else could pull that off? Like, I mean, it comes from deep inside of him, but I mean, no one, if you had a transcript of his, you know, his type five or what, I mean, like,
right, right.
What other comedian could have done those bits, you know?
And what's funny as you say that is I know, given the kind of workhorse he is, have you read Born Standing Up?
Yeah, it's been a while, but yes.
So good, but you know that he probably could have done a tight five with that weird-ass character and his material, but I couldn't imagine what it is. But as you say, if you read a transcript, it would make zero sense. And
yeah, according to Born Standing Up, he would probably just sit in his parents' car all night and just do those bits.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I like that we're comparing these two. These two, if anybody was to ask me the two that I wanted to talk about, I got to do the two that made me want to do this podcast very early on. But the other two that I grew up with most are Let's Get Small and Class Clown. But they're so diametrically different. Casper, I'm wondering, did you ever hear this Steve Martin album at all growing up, or did you have different tastes?
I heard, and I had not heard this album, but I heard and knew very well Wild and Crazy Guy.
Okay.
They are very different. And but listening to this one, I kind of heard a line from Here to Space Ghost and Aqua Teen.
Mm-hmm.
Just pure joyous absurdism, and just reversing expectations within the first sentence of a bit, you know?
Yeah.
And I could see that in Dave's style. I saw an influence there, I think.
There, there's always that. I don't know which Steve Martin album it is, but we probably, and I should name check Ned Hastings here. He's one of our editors, longtime editors and producers, and Matt Malera, the other guy I created Aqua Teen with. It's in a different album where he just says, "One take, goodbye." We probably said that once a week for 15 years, whenever we were clearly fucking off or not, just not nailing it. One take, goodbye.
God,
I don't even know if that's what he says. I could be paraphrasing from memory.
That's a beautiful shorthand, though.
Yeah, yeah, but we would all look at each other, and yeah, it always elicits a smile.
And, in the thing Dave and I do together, I think there'll be some times where this is a little bit of not a divide, but there'll be something that I think is very smart or very clever in the episode. And Dave will say, yeah, but it's not funny. I'm not laughing out loud.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, well, but it's a very good point about something. And it's funny intellectually.
Right.
And I think that kind of ties in a little bit to the divide of, I mean, the differences of, George Carlin and Steve Martin.
It's absolutely true.
I would totally agree with that. Cause I love clever comedy. I love it. And certainly I think there's the great stuff is clever and funny. And to me, if something is really clever or really smart, there's a small part of my brain that just does a standing ovation for it. But I just want that visceral laughter, and I think I missed the boat on Carlin. Listening to it now, I'm like, he has this whole like New Yorker character that's really funny and would have made a great cartoon voice. And
yeah,
I guess maybe his voice just changed over the years, because I always remember him as doing the husky thing in all those cable specials. And he had this really goofy persona in this album that I never associated with George Carlin at all.
I get, you know,
I touched myself in impure manner, impure thoughts, impurities.
Fada. Yeah.
Across the international dateline while you're eating a beef jerky.
That's a really good point. Like I was exposed to Carlin early teens, but exposed to this album exclusively, knowing in the back of my mind that the guy that they were making fun of on The Simpsons with Krusty the Clown having a ponytail, I was like, oh, that's George Carlin. I don't like that guy. I didn't give a shit about angry George Carlin as a kid. And then I hear this, and I'm like, oh, this guy was a genius. But it was you're 100% right. It's a lot more character to his voice. It's a lot more playful, I guess, for lack of a better word. I like that within 9 minutes or so, I kind of had a feeling that this is the divide. I'm glad you said it, the divide between you two, that it's not heavy, but it's a really great working relationship if the two of you have such differing interests in terms of early influential.
We can't be in the same room together. This is like one of the few conversations that's been solicited between us over the past year.
Thank
God for Skype. We'd be at each other's throats.
So, Casper, I guess same question. What kind of, the influence seems obvious. The sort of deep, heady satire that may or may not make you laugh. Did that carry through, though? Like, was that common? Or was this the only album at the time that was this way for you?
Well, but I will back up. And listening to this album again, and I was prepared to be disappointed, but I laughed a ton in it.
Yeah.
I laughed a ton. Although I did not listen to The Seven Words again, because I know that so well.
Yeah.
But I really laughed a lot at it. And I think I love this style of comedy because I just can't help but I'm always thinking about that stuff all the time. Like when I hear things, my whole childhood, it felt like, well, that doesn't make any sense. How's that,
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of had to keep it to myself. Even as a kid, I was thinking that's, even for Hitler, eternity is too much punishment. I would say similarly, Matt Groening's Life in Hell,
mm-hmm.
big influence. But yeah, I would say it influenced me. And even the original pilot of this show was based on a short film that Dave and I did together. And it started from the idea of, it's a George Carlin-ish idea of these people are in a cult and they promise, it's sort of our take on, my take on sort of jihadism, but it's a cult that promises you when you, in the afterlife, you'll have 1,000 virgins and a river of cotton candy and a tree that grows your favorite food. And it just took that idea and said, oh, that's great for a while. And then we cut to black and say 1 million years later, and then you fade up and they're all bored as hell. They're bored of the virgins. They're sick of the cotton candy, and they are going to try to build a rocket ship out of virgin bones to escape heaven.
Jesus Christ. That is, oh my God. I mean, that, yeah. You know, I also like your choice of words. I'm going to guess that if you were both to talk about that same scene separately, that maybe, Dave, you wouldn't use the word my take on it. That seems like a satirist's angle. Being a satirist myself, I'm just
saying. Well, I mean, in fairness, you know, it's not so yin and yang. I mean, there's certainly.
That's true.
I mean, I have something to say. I'm not just all goofball, but
of course.
But by that same token, Chris is very much, you know, I mean, Chris's work, even, you know, before Your Pretty Face and on Too Many Cooks, I mean, he's keenly aware of, you know, just those goofy big laugh moments, you know, and what elicits them. But it's a, but yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
I do think, and I know it sounded like I was doing the interviewer thing of saying, hey, you're kind of this, and hey, you're a little bit, but I think it's more that your differences are subtle, and it's fun to pick them out, because obviously they're subtle, otherwise you couldn't put together a show as complex and interesting as Your Pretty Face Is Going to Hell, unless, you know, but you have to have these, like, subtle approaches, and I'm trying to pick it out, and maybe succeeding, maybe not. Let's go back to Class Clown for a second. Do you have a favorite bit off of this? You said that you didn't re-listen to Seven Words because you have it probably memorized, it sounds like.
Well, I definitely loved the, let me look at here, the track listing.
Sure.
You know, where is it? Here we go. Oh, here we go. I liked even more now Class Clown itself. I think I was a little uncomfortable with all the fart jokes and everything as a kid. I enjoyed it more now because I was a weird kid. But I still love that whole side too, the confessional with Father Rivera and Special Dispensation. Mm-hmm. Talking. In fact, I wrote this is even more influenced. I wrote a Squidbillies about the Second Coming. I went to a church that we had a Sunday school teacher that really made me afraid that that was coming right away, because she was like, the world's going to end. I remember I had some jokes about limbo in that episode. And I'm sure that was partly inspired by George Carlin. So that and Heavy Mysteries, those first four tracks on side four were a big influence on me. Yeah, but the whole idea of a confession that, even though it's supposed to be this perfect judgment down from God, it depends on whichever priest you get, if you're going to get a light punishment or a heavy punishment, and you try to get the, what was he, Puerto Rican? The Puerto Rican priest slack. I don't know. It was just really funny to me. I don't know.
Yeah, no. And
when I heard it, I was instantly thinking about that whole bit where he says, you know, some things aren't even a sin anymore, like eating meat on a Friday isn't a sin anymore, but I bet people are burning in hell on that meat wrap. And we were immediately thinking, oh, that's an episode. You know, you could do like a Southern, like a sweaty Southern courtroom drama where he's trying to get someone paroled out of hell because they were down there for eating meat. Of course, then they later find out he was eating human meat. And he did not tell his lawyer.
That is good God, that's delightful. Oh, that makes me very happy. There is this weird George Carlin's, and again, I've never just actively, before us talking about it today, really thought of how goofy he is and how, I mean, playful maybe. You know, the hippie guy that he was at the time has always been an obvious thing, but like the goofiness, but at the same time hitting stuff that is inspiring you to in your heads to just come up with this equally dark, if not as, I mean, it just as silly, I guess, but it never occurs to me how dark some of this stuff, because I didn't grow up religious, so that stuff didn't ring false. It was obviously jokes, but it wasn't clear to me exactly what he's making fun of because I didn't grow up in it.
Right. And I think to me, like the track Values and Muhammad Ali were much more, they're a little too heavy handed, a little too strident. They're still good.
Sure.
I mean, there's good stuff in Values especially, but they're a little heavy handed. And I think that's his weakness when he tries to hammer the message too much versus the playful absurdity of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think those ones about Catholicism really balance that wonderful line, and they're just funny to me. You know?
I get that. The Lenny Bruce, really? The Lenny Bruce influence is quite clear in that more heavy-handed stuff. Nothing against, I like Lenny Bruce, but that's where I think the influences are obvious.
I actually thought Muhammad Ali was kind of brilliant, but then the America the Beautiful just made me embarrassed for him in my car, even though he's dead. I was looking around.
That's what I meant. You're right. That part of it. Oh. That part of it. Yeah, it's heavy handed.
Oh my God.
When I was a kid, that was the deepest thing in the world to me. I was like, oh my God, this guy's amazing. And like looking back, yeah, you make a very good point. It might be the most embarrassing bit on the whole thing.
I shuddered.
which is interesting because you know, if we go back to Steve Martin, there's not an item on there. You can't pick it apart in the same way because there's no soul bearing whatsoever on that album.
No,
not an ounce.
No. I didn't really think about why I liked it as a kid, but as an adult, I forget about just this showbiz asshole that he, you know, I mean, I had a cat named Gern Blanston. I completely forgot about that. But I named my cat Gern Blanston based on this album.
That is fantastic.
And Gern had some mental issues. Like he didn't know how to even bathe himself.
Oh no.
So he was just a filthy cat and his hair started sticking up and it just felt really consistent with the shit. But I love his rhythm. I love how he was with the audience. I mean, one of my favorite things was just in Google Phonics where he just keeps messing it up.
Uh-huh.
At the beginning is like, seriously, stereo me bot. he keeps blowing it and he's legitimately having fun but he's not dying. He's just, you know, he's continuing that character and I mean it's all him being this surface idiot.
Yeah.
You know, the whole I think that cardboard bit, we've done sort of versions of that in once again Ned Hastings' room. We're sitting at it and it was like, well, I got cardboard when it was 14 cents a ton. Well, now it's up to 16. You got 3 tons of it, so, you know, you do the math. as a way to impress women. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm not on this podcast to try to recreate the bits, but...
it happens sometimes. And sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I'm the one doing it, so it's okay. I'm glad somebody else is taking a hit for me. It's fun, though. Like, that's part of, at least, like, you're not, I don't know, and I could be wrong. I'll ask you, Casper, in a second if this happened with you. I don't think you're going to school quoting George Carlin to your friends. I could be wrong. But Steve Martin, for sure, is like a one long SNL sketch. You're like, hey, did you see this? And you could do the whole fucking bit by heart.
You're right. I'm trying to analyze why that is, but you're right. it's because it's so fun. The faux seriousness that's so openly ridiculous is just fun. The rhythm of it is just very fun.
It's true. And as a kid, you're going to respond to that more than anything else. I feel like I, again, could be wrong, but I feel like, and this is one of those common things I like to talk about on the show is like, I made friends over comedy. That's why I started this. And I feel like the shit that you could share with people openly was the stuff that really solidified friendships. Not for everybody, but for a lot of people I talk to.
Yeah, I'm not going to go on the bus and go whip a little capitalism on them. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, I had really one of my two best friends from high school, and he would just recite "Let's Get Small," you know, and this is back in the days before cell phones and all that stuff. We would just laid on the floor in his drum room on our backs and he would just recite it. It was as good as listening to it.
I thought you were going to say you'd sit down and like listen to it together and later he would quote it, but I love that was the deal. You sat down and he performed. That is amazing.
Yes. Looking up at the ceiling.
Holy
as he's
shit.
Performing it.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Casper, did you have anything like that? Or were you too busy with George Carlin?
I don't know if I had anyone reciting it, but I just had, I was over at the Vaught's house while they beat each other with nunchucks and trying to get access to more of their parents' album collection. Since my parents was basically probably Bob Denver and whoever did that Bowl Weevil song. Or John Denver, yeah.
Okay, still.
That's positively hip, man. My parents had, like, the Ray Conniff sisters.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
And I remember they were going to play some AC/DC backwards, and I was scared. I had to go home. I did not want to get possessed by Satan.
Holy crap. And that's, I'm assuming, before Carlin. Did Carlin blow your mind?
Yeah. Well, I think I was already there. I mean, my mind was there. I was ready for it.
Okay.
It wasn't like I was one way and it flipped me another, I think. I think it confirmed what I thought in a very funny way.
Mm-hmm.
So it was delightful and satisfying.
I get that.
It did blow my mind.
Yeah. I mean, something that not just like, you know, that's probably more the case, is not something immediately changes your worldview, but immediately confirms it. And that's kind of when things get solidified. We're like, I have this idea on my own. Oh, somebody I respect or seems like I should respect immediately just spoke that thing back to me that was in my own head. And it's crazy when comedy does it. It doesn't seem like that's the job of comedy, but it's nice when it does happen.
Oh yeah. I think it is one of the jobs of comedy.
I think that's too, but
that's like the court jester that will say the shit about the king that no one else can say, you know, I think that's part of it. I think that's part of his job. I think
you're
right. But it's got to be funny first.
Exactly. I mean, otherwise he can't steal his thorny crown. That won't happen otherwise. That was a shitty reference. Dave, did you have anything like that that kind of broke open the world for you in terms of comedy or no?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, my parents wouldn't allow me to watch The Jerk, you know, when it came out.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to see it years later and appreciate it on this whole other level. And of course I've seen it a lot since then. Like, you know, not all of it stands up, Iron Balls McGinty being one, but but I mean, I feel like we've ripped off that joke that I don't need anything. Well, I need this, but I don't need anything else. You know, I do remember, you know, I was born in 1970, so, like, we would have cable off and on. That was a big deal, and Robin Williams sort of exploded onto the scene. And I'm not, you know, I mean, rest in peace, but I remember, even as a kid, loving it instantly, and then but not too long after that going, I think he's just moving really fast. to be into thinking I'm being entertained. Like, he's going into this sort of mincing. I didn't know what a homosexual was at the time. Uh-huh. So I was like, he's going into this sort of mincing woman man character a lot. And then sometimes in ways that don't make sense to me. It's not goofy. It just doesn't add up. And John Wayne is like all over the place here. and then, of course, Eddie Murphy shortly thereafter. And
yes. Honey, why are you putting your balls in the SNL sink?
Would he come in SNL, what, 82?
I think so. That sounds about right.
When he Baby, was... why are your balls in the sink? That's nasty.
Well, I seem to recall us trying to watch his special through a channel that my parents didn't pay for. So you'd have to click it. You click away and then click back onto it for a few seconds. That was cable technology back then. If the channel was scrambled, you had to click on it, click away from it, and then click back on it, and it would come back in for 3 seconds.
God, I remember that. So. It's unusual for us to, you know, do two albums per episode, but I kind of like it. I think I don't know that I could verbally necessarily say where the crossover is between the two, but there's clearly something. What I'd like to ask, normally I ask people, why would you recommend this album? Because, you know, usually people grew up with it, and, you know, what's a good reason to listen to this album if you've never heard this person's material before? I want to ask that, but I also would like to ask each of you to, if you can, and if you would, recommend the other one's album, why it's worth listening to if you'd never heard it before or haven't heard it in a long time.
You want me to recommend the George Carlin album?
Well, I would say Comedy Is Not Pretty first, but then I want to see if there is a recommendation you would have for Class Clown. If not, you don't have to, but I'd be curious to see what your opinion is.
Well, for Comedy Is Not Pretty, I would say it's sort of like an all-ages affair. I mean, with the exception of a couple of things, but it's also a document of just how, I think, dominant he was for a short period of time as a stand-up, and how, as an adult, I've prayed that he would come back and do like just a stand-up tour.
Of course.
Just because he wasn't really a stand-up for really that long. Once he was mega successful, and then he just stopped. I saw him do a banjo thing in New York, and I was very happy with that. But I even think of bits in movies that I don't remember. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels as a movie, but his bit as Ruprecht, I remember still just making me laugh, you know? Just one of the all-time greats in my mind. And this is him, you know, at the peak. So, in my opinion. And so that's why I would recommend that. And it's just, and it's also goofy comedy. And like Chris said, it's like, I love smart comedy too, but there's not enough of just pure dumb da-da funny for funny's sake. And this is probably as close to, you know, the Brits had Monty Python, but this was right in my wheelhouse as far as the goofiness. And with the Carlin thing, I mean, in some ways, you know, I've only listened to it a few times here and just recently, but I mean, I think it's a nice document of certainly that time in history. And, you know, I like the Muhammad Ali bit. I was a fan of Ali's, and I just thought that was a really smart joke about him in a way that I grew up religious and Chris grew up religious, and now we're sort of messing with those with our backgrounds with this show, Your Pretty Face Is Going to Hell. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to sort of see that this was done probably at a time where it really probably pissed a lot of people off.
Sure.
And it's kind of a nice document of somebody who was ahead of his time at pissing people off. Sorry, long-winded.
No. That was the perfect amount of wind.
I feel like I can now say four of those words on television.
It's true. That is true.
I know. I was trying to think about that. I think the only ones left are cunt and motherfucker, right?
Shit, piss, fucker, and cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits. Yeah.
I said cocksucker, like, in my parents' house. I'm in my 40s, right? I said it 10 years ago because I couldn't get their printer to work. It obviously doesn't mean what it meant then. Now it's an expletive.
Yeah.
I called the printer a cocksucker. And my dad ran upstairs three steps at a time and said, "Don't let your mother hear you say that word in the house." And I was like, "Really?
Holy shit."
Yeah. I called an Epson printer a cocksucker.
It still meant
something to him.
Yeah. So Casper, why would you recommend Class Clown, and then can you make a recommendation for Comedy Is Not Pretty?
Oh yeah. Well, I'm curious if my daughters will get Class Clown, because I really feel like some of it is timeless. If you go to church, which they don't, mm-hmm. I think you can understand. I think my kids can get that, and I think Class Clown itself really made me laugh. I think it's just a great. It's an honest portrayal about his youth and the aspects of childhood, which I think a lot of it will still translate, I think. And it really just made me laugh. I was really prepared to be disappointed by it. It does make me laugh. And I guess a lot of other people have done this album, so it's got that going for it.
Yeah.
And the Steve Martin is... It is absurdity at its finest, and it has such a looseness that Dave was talking about, where that like that portion where he just keeps starting over because he muffed it once and he turns that into a bit. It has a looseness to it, and I think here might be an observation is this is going to be so pretentious, but this is half-assed because I just thought of it. But Chuck Klosterman did a bit about Billy Joel and how Billy Joel is actually good, but nobody really wants to be Billy Joel. Like you don't want to be Billy Joel like you want to be Mick Jagger. And I think to a small degree, that's the case here. Everybody wanted to be Steve Martin. I wanted to be Steve Martin. I liked what George Carlin had to say, but I did not want to be him.
Yeah.
Steve Martin was just so cool. And I wanted to be him.
But
George, you know, Chuck Klosterman is a contrarian by nature. He's probably got an essay out there talking about, I wanted to be George Carlin, and everyone else wanted to be Steve Martin.
Well, this has been a ton of fun. I actually like this confusing back and forth because it didn't become frustrating. We're talking about two totally different fucking albums, but it was fun. You guys are here specifically though to talk about Your Pretty Face Is Going to Hell. Why don't you give the audience some details about it?
Your Pretty Face Is Going to Hell. It's on Adult Swim. It is a workplace comedy set in hell. So you have in cubicles and, so you have the whole aspect of hating your job, but your job involves whipping people and peeling their skin off.
Mm-hmm.
And it follows Henry Zabowski, who plays Gary, who's a demon that's a little too kind-hearted and slack to do his job very well.
It's like a cross between Office Space and Hellraiser.
If that doesn't get your interest, we don't want you.
Understandable. No, that's understandable.
And I'm going to also beg... this is a total side note. If you're ever in the mood for a little side bonus episode, I want to talk about, I can't remember her name. She's from Georgia. Whoever did that song, Telephone Man, or which was my first single. I think it was that and Short People were my first two singles. And what fascinates me about it, it's not good. I didn't get any of the sexual innuendo in it, but it interests me in the sense of, as time passes, you compress a decade to certain things, like the 60s will be, you know, the Beatles and JFK and so forth. And there's all these weird other parts of a decade that are forgotten. And I think that single is one of them. Just the corniness of it, anyway. And also the whole pun of it is that a penis is a ding-a-ling, which I don't think has been in use for decades. It's weird to think, and I'd forgotten it myself, that you used to call a penis a ding-a-ling. Did you ever do that, Dave? Did you guys ever call it a ding-a-ling?
God, we sound like two retirees.
Did you?
We used to call it a tallywhacker back in my
day. In our day, we called it a... Yes. So anyway, it made me laugh, thinking about that single. But the single itself does not make me laugh.
The only two songs, there are two songs with ding-a-ling in them that I can think of. That would be this, and then, of course, the classic My Ding-a-ling by Chuck Berry. But this one is, you know, of course, much more subtle. you know what? That would be fun. I've been trying to find a way to do like an episode about novelty, maybe more than one novelty song, because they're hard to squeeze in. Because if you do say, let's do an entire album by somebody who did a bunch of novelty songs, like a Ray Stevens, A, nobody asks me to do that. B, I don't know how much I could say for an hour on an entire album of Ray Stevens songs. Nothing against him. I just, you know, it's hard. It's not like he's Weird Al. Weird Al has an aesthetic that we could talk about. Yes.
We did an episode of Squidbillies where we sort of, sheriff wants to be a comedian, and he's inspired by a song by Steve Ravens, who is our stand-in for Ray Stevens, who had a song called The Leak, which, you know, obviously based on The Streak, but it was a little more just deviant. It was about a man who liked to watch people piss and poop through a hole in the wall. So it's one of those like sort of novelty songs that as soon as people start to really listen to it, they go, wait a minute, this guy's kind of creep. But then it became this whole discussion of comedy, and we wrote Weird Al into the show, and then we weren't able to get him. So then we thought it was appropriate to parody Weird Al with a character called Strange Hal. And then the irony was that Weird Al contacted us right after it aired and said, why didn't you call me?
Nah, of course.
I would have done it.
Holy shit. Oh, well, that's good. God, that's amazing. I that's kind of the dream, at least for somebody like myself. That's fantastic. You know, actually, speaking of Weird Al, the last time we had somebody from your show on the podcast, which was Craig Rowan did the show in, I don't remember when the hell it was, but he talked about a Weird Al episode as well. So this is the second time your show has been featured on the podcast. I do appreciate you guys doing this and taking the time out, because it's a lot later there for you guys.
No worries. Otherwise I'd be putting my kids to bed. So
sure. Where can we, so obviously we can watch the show on Adult Swim. I'm assuming episodes on adultswim.com if you're cut off from cable.
Or Hulu.
There we go. Where can we find you guys on the internet outside of that show?
Twitter at Hey Casper Kelly. And what's your Twitter handle, Dave?
At Dave Willis 2.
Simple enough.
Put a lot of time into it.
Well, thank you guys again for doing this. Obviously, either of you, welcome back anytime. Everybody who's listening, go to lookingforward.com. Pardon me, lookingforwardmovie.com now, which is my movie that's going to be coming out one blog at a time. Well, till the election. We started in March. We're at about 11 hours of footage right now. So enjoy. And please subscribe to us on iTunes and all that good stuff. Thank you guys very, very much for joining me. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And as always, have a good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com.
A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune into the new Stand Up channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast.